Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is The Big Picture, and this is AB Dawji broadcasting on Radio Islam and Radio Al Ansar. So, how's it and all? Yes, there's 1 week already gone, eh? But it seems like a very long week, parking at home with nothing to do. No doubt everybody agrees that this Ramadan under lockdown is just not the same. The whole atmosphere has changed dramatically. You know, I saw the streets of the old city of Jerusalem on Al Jazeera, all those gullies, empty, shops closed. Al-Aqsa, standing there very, very lonely, a sad sight indeed. When normally it's filled with thousands of musallis streaming in up those gullies to Al-Aqsa. And it's like that everywhere in the world. Right here too, there is a huge feeling of, emptiness, a vacuum. And I myself feel somewhat melancholic. Not colic. No gas involved here. Melancholic, a bit sad. Although on the question of colic, some may say that the Halim definitely has some bomb-making ingredients in it. Yeah, a strange kind of Ramadan. We usually see Muslim women wearing the niqab. Now the whole world is wearing it. Muslims and non-Muslims, women and men, hey? And from yesterday it has been compulsory. And everyone looks anonymous with their masks on. You know, I was at a supermarket and I was in the veg department, and I asked the assistant, hey, how much are these madumbis? And there's no price shown anywhere. And there was a person nearby who said, hey, AB, how's it, hey? How's Ramzan? Hey, I remember the trip to the Middle East in 2018. We had Maja, and he spoke for about 2 or 3 minutes, and we laughed, and I really didn't know who that person was at all. I had a full mask on, so maybe it was my voice he recognized, or maybe my amazing hairstyle, or my steel blue eyes, or my striking physique. Don't laugh. I've got into a routine from the day I got back from Norway at the end of March and was in quarantine. I've done thousands of kilometers on my orbit trek in my room. And also some very serious sit-ups. So the 12-pack is now down to 11-pack. Yes, right through the past week in Ramadan, every day. So that's something positive, eh? Alhamdulillah. And speaking about positive, in these days, in these times, it's good to be negative. By that I mean negative as far as getting a negative result from the coronavirus, COVID-19. I really hate to do this, but I have to put on my prophet of doom hat on. Here's a headline. COVID-19. Infections could rise by 10% per day after lockdown lifts. That's the headline. From yesterday, that's May the 1st, 1.5 million workers are due to start returning to work. And the article says, Professor Tulio de Oliveira, director of the KwaZulu-Natal Research and Innovation Sequence Platform at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, says the infection rates will increase to about 10% per day after the lockdown is downgraded. And Professor Salim Abdul Karim, who chairs the Ministerial Advisory Committee on COVID-19, said, I think we will see a slow and steady rise in cases. I think that will sort of lead to a point where it will rise more rapidly, he said, adding that the mathematical models put the peak of infections at August or September. And Minister in the Presidency, Jackson Mtembo, was vibrating with concern. Did you get that one, eh? He was vibrating with concern. He also indicated this week that the government expected the infections to peak around September. Well, did you hear that, eh? the estimation is that figures will rise and rise until we reach a high point around September. And, well, that is just a guess. This virus is something new. It's uncharted waters, as I keep telling you. And the guess is based on mathematical models. And, of course, the hope that people will respect social distancing, sanitizing hands, wearing masks, and so on. And the worst part is that some may have the virus already and show no signs of being sick. Asymptomatic is called, and will spread it quietly and unknowingly. So the guess that we will reach the peak in around September is just that, a calculated guess. And to show you how off the mark we can be, let me just look at what's happening in the United States, a country with great resources, many healthcare workers, top hospitals, healthcare facilities, many other things far ahead of us in dealing with this pandemic. Let me read to you from the CNN website. It says here, the new coronavirus is likely to keep spreading for at least another 18 months to 2 years until 60% to 70% of the population has been infected, a team of longstanding pandemic experts predicted in a report released Thursday. They recommended that the U.S. prepare for a worst-case scenario that includes a second big wave of coronavirus infections in the fall, that's in winter. Even in a best-case scenario, people will continue to die from the virus, they predicted. Mike Osterholm, who directs the Center for Infectious Diseases Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota, told CNN, this thing's not going to stop until it infects 60 to 70% of people. The idea that this is going to be done soon defies microbiology. So, this is exactly what I've been telling you. Let me use my own description. The virus is predictably unpredictable. The virus is predictably unpredictable. Unpredictable. What that means is that I can say for certain, I can predict that it's unpredictable, meaning we can't be certain how it will behave, how or when the whole thing will end. It's just plain calculated guesswork. Now, Dr. Salim said this also. He said, and if we adopt the approach that we have got nothing to worry about, then we undermine this virus and we'll go back to square one quite quickly. And we are banking on people persisting with precautions, wearing a mask, washing their hands, keeping social distancing, he added. He said, adding that these precautions were absolutely key. Did you get that word? Absolutely key. Important. So, if we stop doing that, he says, if we stop doing that, we'll undo all of the benefits. You can't look at what we did under the lockdown as, now that it's all done, let's go back and have a party. You can't do that. And I have tried to explain that. Life is going to be different. So, the essence of what he is saying is that we looked at the data so far under lockdown conditions. We looked at the data under lockdown conditions, and if people behave responsibly going forward, doing the social distancing thing, the hand washing, the mask, and so on, we expect August or September to be the highest point, the peak of the infection, and then it will start going down. The prediction is based on this. But hey, what happened yesterday? The Pavilion Shopping Center was chock-a-block. And listen to this. The article is entitled Lockdown, Soweto Shoppers Fear Return of Level 5 as Mall Patrons Disregard Regulation. Some Soweto shoppers fear the country could return to a Level 5 lockdown if regulations are not adhered to. They are worried about sharing trolleys that are not sanitized, lack of social distancing, and some shoppers not wearing masks in shopping malls. On Friday, malls in Soweto were packed to the rafters, with shoppers grabbing essential items such as food, winter clothes, heaters, and other goods, while others paid their accounts. Lebo Shisebe arrived at the mall at around 9 a.m. And this is what it says. Inside the mall, I was shocked when I observed that us as customers, we are not following regulation. There was no physical distancing. We were queuing very close to each other for a long time. And did you see the clip of Cape Town? How hordes of people running on the promenade. And so many of them I saw didn't have masks. And so Police Minister Becky, you heard this on the news. Becky Thales says some South Africans are not obeying lockdown regulations and warned level 4 regulations could be reversed as COVID-19 has the potential of wiping off humankind. I saw people running in clubs, walking with their dogs, and they were even swimming, something which is criminalized in the regulations. And he says, and by the way, remember what the president said, if things are not going a proper way, reversal is easy. From what we have seen, South Africa is misbehaving. Hey, so you see, dear people, if people behave properly, the prediction is that from September things will start getting better. But the reality is that people are not adhering to the rules. So the peak of this epidemic could probably, well, cannot be properly forecast. It's a very clear fact. But on a different note, let me tell you this. I'm not a violent person, but one thing makes my blood boil. So here am I in a supermarket, and I see some people walking around with a mask, but it is dangling under their chin, not covering their mouth and nose. You know, I want to go over there and give them a tight clap. What you got it there for, Mamu? It's not a fashion accessory like a bow tie or something. It makes me so cross. I just want to tell them, hey, you know what? You have to wear the blurry thing. Eh? Then I go over to pay. I go over to pay with my stuff. I ask the lady behind the till, why are you not wearing a mask? And she replied, eh, it's too hot. And I think to myself, hey, when you got the corona, you got a boiling hot fever, your temperature is 40 degrees, then I wonder how you will feel. But I just smiled and told her in a very friendly way, you are going to die. And she laughed. She laughed, can you believe it? So, are you scared? Are you scared? Well, you should be. Eh? But let me tell you, what are you worried about? You are also going to die. let me just take off my Prophet of Doom hat off and tell you a very big secret. You probably won't die. Many people have recovered. So, the secret that I want to tell you is this. We are told that people who are old and also are already suffering from some sort of illness will very likely die if they catch the virus. If they're suffering from some illness and they are very old, they'll probably die if they catch the virus. Well, nothing is certain. Life and death is in Allah's hands. A 90-year-old whose birthday it is this month and who was quite unwell with pneumonia and all of this for quite a few months was tested positive for the virus 10 days ago. He's been in quarantine ever since then. Alhamdulillah, he is doing so well, almost completely back to normal, eating well, sleeping well, just a bit bored, that's all. Otherwise, alhamdulillah, almost completely recovered. And who is this 90-year young man? Who is this young man? 90 years old. I don't know if you like me to say it, but it's my dad. Yes, folks, my dad, Ahmad Dauji, waiting for his 4 days in house arrest to be over. So again, we can fear the worst, but Allah is the best of planners. So, that's one bit of good news. Is there anything else in these days of doom and gloom? Well, it looks like the petrol price is set to go down. There has been an oil war carrying on between Saudi Arabia and Russia, and lots of oil has been pumped up, but nobody wants it because planes and cars and all are parked off. So the demand is very low, and so there's a problem. It's pumping up, no place to store it. The price of a barrel of oil went right down to zero. My man, Pagla, at the White House, was not happy because American oil sales also dropped. So, let me tell you what he said in October of 2018, and it was reported by Al Jazeera. U.S. President Donald Trump said close ally Saudi Arabia and its king would not last for 2 weeks without U.S. military support at a rally in Mississippi on Tuesday. He says, we protect Saudi Arabia. Would you say they're rich? And I love the king, King Salman. But I said, King, we're protecting you. You might not be there for 2 weeks without us. You have to pay for our military. Imagine saying that to someone, eh? Hey, boss, if I ditched you, you will just fall down. I'm your bodyguard, okay? What an insult. But you know what? It's the truth. For 75 years, the U.S. has protected the so-called royal family. The royal family. And it was a wonderful relationship. America bought the oil and the Saudis bought American military weaponry. What was the last bill? It was $54 billion. Wow, that could buy some nice lot of khajur, eh? So Pagla called Bin Salman to stop pumping so much oil so that prices can go up. Listen to this. In a second April phone call, Trump said the Crown Prince told the Crown Prince that unless OPEC started cutting oil production, he would be unable to stop lawmakers from passing legislation to withdraw U.S. troops from Saudi Arabia. Bin Salman was so taken aback by the threat that he ordered his aides out of the room so he could continue the discussion in private. The week before Trump's phone call with the Crown Prince, U.S. Republican Senators Kevin Cramer and Dan Sullivan had introduced legislation to remove all U.S. soldiers, Patriot missiles and anti-missile defense system from the kingdom unless Saudi Arabia cut oil output. So there you are, folks. The royal family knows that it can only survive with the U.S. as its bodyguard. What a shame, eh? What a shame. So, there we are. Now, let's see what else we've got for you. Right. So, last week, we had this big court case, if you remember. So, what is my view about whether the masjid should be opened or closed? What's my opinion? Well, that is none of your business, eh? I am just a lay person, especially under lockdown, laying around doing nothing. But seriously, I don't want to get involved in the lawyers' war or the ulema wars. But someone who can give us an insight into this judgment that was reached is the erudite, articulate, and incisive, well-known attorney and radio presenter, Aslam Mayat. Aslam Mayat, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam, AB. I see you generating a lot of interest.
Right, so let's start unpacking the whole thing, okay? Let me just see now.
Yeah. Okay, look, whatever I say, AB, is going to be an opinion only.
Now, don't be modest, Habibi. Don't be modest.
Yeah, look, this is not time for majah. Law is not an exact science. So even if somebody can attach an SC to his name, it remains an opinion. Like in medicine, when we're faced with a major operation, many get a second specialist opinion. Now, unfortunately, when it comes to religion, we abandon sin. With blind faith, we believe our alim to be 1,000% right. And those ulama with an opposite view to be destined to hellfire.
So currently, what is the law?
Okay, we all know that the Pretoria High Court ruled that the ban on all religious gatherings remains, whether it's at a mosque or elsewhere. Now, that excludes funerals, which has specific rules. So the application was dismissed, and mosques remain closed until these regulations are either changed by government or set aside by the courts.
Aslam, does the judgment not violate our constitutionally entrenched right of religious freedom?
Yeah, look, our Bill of Rights protects the right to life, dignity, race, gender equality, also freedom of movement, and the right to practice one's religion. Now, the Disaster Management Act regulations seek to protect the right to life by restricting freedom of movement and restricting the right to practice religion. Now, please note, freedom of religion is not being restricted. Only the manner in which an individual wishes to practice it. Now, in our case, it's to go to the masjid and pray in congregation 5 times a day.
Right, so what is the job of the task team?
Yeah, look, government has assembled its best scientists in various disciplines, headed by Prof. Salim Karim, to advise it. COVID is a novel virus, and the advisory team is learning each day from local and overseas trends. It is not possible to prevent the spread. All government can hope to achieve is that by enforcing strict social distancing, the curve is flattened sufficiently to allow our healthcare system to cope until a vaccine is discovered. And perhaps they're erring on the side of caution, who knows.
So where does the government fit in?
Okay, so armed with this advice, government has to balance the competing constitutional rights. Now, primarily in our case, we've got the right to life against religious practice. Then they've got to weigh this up against a host of other relevant factors. The economy, transportation, public health system, poverty, TB prevalence, willingness of society to obey the law, capacity of police to enforce, capacity of our jails to hold alleged offenders, capacity of our justice system to cope, given, you know, the social distancing issues that they've got to conform with. Now, having put all of this into the basket, the government has to arrive at an optimum national policy decision for the entire nation. Now, COVID is an ever-moving landscape, changing weekly, if not daily. Government regularly reviews the position and issues amended regulations. Now, not every interest group, whether it be religious, taxis, alcohol, whatever, will be satisfied, and many are rushing to court.
But, alright, so you've given us the backdrop. How does the court decide?
Look, a South African court can decide only on the relief it is asked to rule upon, and also the manner in which the case is presented to it by each party. Now, the crux of what we all wanted the court to determine in this matter was whether or not the state's refusal to allow congregational religious worship with sanitary safeguards, whether that was the state's refusal was reasonable or not. In other words, was the blanket ban on religious gatherings justified or not?
So therefore, constitutionally, is a blanket ban lawful?
AB, look, given your modest capacity to comprehend, you must listen carefully now.
Okay, I'm going to hold that against you.
Okay, each of the protected rights which we dealt with may be limited only in terms of a law of general application, and then only to the extent that that limitation is reasonable and justifiable in a democracy. And our democracy is based on dignity, equality, and freedom. So it has to be a law of general application, and the limitation must be reasonable. And the factors that the court has to take into consideration are, you've got to look at the nature of the right. Now, in this case, it's the freedom of religious practice. You've got to look at the importance and purpose of the limitation. In this case, the lives and livelihood of the nation is being imperiled. You've got to look at the nature and extent of the limitation. In our case, pray at home, not in congregation.
Okay, I'm going to push you a little bit there too. We need to speed up a little bit.
In relation to the limitation and purpose, you've got to flatten the curve. And the most important is, were you using less restrictive means to achieve the purpose? And the government presented expert evidence in support, whilst the applicants gave no expert assistance to the court.
Now, Aslam, you emphasize law of general application and less restrictive means. So why does government not allow prayer at masjid with the sensible sanitary safeguards proposed by the applicants?
Yeah. Any law has to apply equally to all faiths, not just for Muslims and not just for one Didier masjid. The Constitution does not allow favoritism. What the court really had to grapple with is, after balancing all the relevant factors, whether the purpose of the blanket ban on religious gatherings, that is the objective of flattening the curve, could be achieved by less restrictive means. Now, the applicants had proposed safeguards such as limit of 20 individuals in relay, which they later changed to 4 males only, with a permit from a magistrate, sanitary safeguards like temperature testing, disinfectant, masks, gloves, etc. Now, the difficulty that was faced by the judge is the applicants claimed on oath. They started off in their papers on oath praising the government. Now, I quote, the president's remarkable level of foresight and leadership in instituting the national lockdown, in averting crisis faced even by first world countries. They went on further on oath to say that, I quote again, they do not wish to undermine the efforts of our honorable president in fighting the COVID-19 pandemic. Now that the judgment has gone against them, some of their supporters have changed their tune. Now the same remarkably foresighted government are a bunch of crooks for the last 26 years. Some now call for mass civil disobedience, like against the apartheid regime. Now, these are the same people who declare that they stand for haq and truth. Now, having praised the government's national COVID plan, the applicants then sought to second-guess it with sanitary safeguard proposals. However, they provided no scientific evidence to justify and persuade the court that such limitations will flatten the curve. The government, on the other hand, as I said, justified the limitations, backing of detailed evidence from eminent scientists with diagrams of parabolas to justify that the limitations were reasonable and justifiable in the circumstances, and therefore constitutional. Now, the high watermark of the applicant's case seems to have been that it is Ramadan and the Muslim communities will feel deep pain. Now, in South Africa, we don't have a U.S. jury system, especially not the one you see in the soapies, where theatrics can sway the layperson. A South African judge has to base her decision on facts and logic. The state justified its limitation on the right of freedom to practice religion with evidence. The applicants provided no evidence to refute this or to demonstrate that their less restrictive proposals would flatten the curve. Now, I'm not necessarily arguing for or against open mosques. I'm simply trying to explain to the listeners how a South African court will consider such a matter in order to arrive at its decision.
So, Aslam, bearing in mind the legalities, What did the court find?
Okay. The court said that while lockdown regulations are a serious limitation of our rights, it cannot lightly interfere with government policy. The court said that by allowing 850 masjids plus temples, churches, synagogues to operate would open the floodgates to untold number of persons moving around with no hope of flattening the curve. The safeguards proposed by the applicants meant that more people than simply those who would, had come to pray would congregate at the mosque. The state simply did not have the resources to monitor every single religious place of worship because the officers were needed to fight the pandemic. Court said it's inconceivable that authority can be given to a magistrate to decide who should and who should not be given a permit to attend the mosque. The court cited the example of South Korea, where a single lady attending a church gathering led to hundreds being infected, and tracer teams scouring the country to locate possible contact persons. That church of hers had 300,000 people. The judge mentioned Izamuddin and also a prayer breakfast in Jerusalem as other examples of the danger posed. The court pointed out that every citizen was called upon to make sacrifices. Jewish and Christian festivals over Easter could not take place, such as the Zion Christian gathering in Moriah. Each religious sector of the country had to make tremendous sacrifices for the greater good. School kids, for example, were asked to comply. The court couldn't allow a concession to one masjid or one group only. That violates the Constitution. Now, the judge emphasized Ubuntu and the need for all of us to unify and conform to beat the virus. And all, you know, you in your earlier thing, you told us of all the dangers of how this thing can get out of hand.
Mm-hmm. But, Aslam, the government has made concessions.
That is correct. You're 100% right. Concessions have been made for, and the judge, this is, I'm telling you what the judge said. Concessions have been made for essential services, industry, mines, taxis, etc. But such were distinguishable and justifiable on the grounds of economic necessity. The court admitted that the concession for funerals was problematic, but felt that it was justifiable. It was a justifiable exception because it was once-off, a once-off event, and the family needed closure. The court mentioned the first amicus uksa, which represented the majority view of Islam.
Why do you say that uksa represents the majority?
I say nothing. The applicants themselves, on oath, declared that theirs was a minority view. Now, Uksa's view, and I'm telling you what the court said, was that Muslims may pray at home, and Islam views the right to life as important, and actions that interfere with this right to life, no matter how noble, are considered harmful in Islam.
And what about the other amicus?
Yeah, that's a women's cultural group, which, last week I actually omitted to say, I apologize. They were represented by attorneys Shokat Karim and company. Now, women's cultural group pointed out that a male worshipper could contract and bring home the virus, thus threatening the life and health of female and minor children of the household. For these most vulnerable people, Women's Cultural Group proposed further safeguards in addition to those proposed by the applicants themselves.
Right, we're going to speed up a little bit. Attorney Zahir Umar talked about exhausting legal remedies. He's going to go further. What's all that about?
Yeah, look, if leave to appeal is granted, it may finally have to be determined by the Constitutional Court because there's a constitutional issue, which might warrant the matter to be first ventilated by all religious and other groups before the Constitutional Court would hear it, So, but look, from what I've said, look, I don't think the prospects are good. A better route would be or might be to bring a fresh application on the basis of the approach by Advocate Nazir Qasim, who argues that on a technicality, that if the National Command Council, which comprises of 19 ministers, instead of the entire national executive, which comprises of 29 ministers, is making the decisions, then the regulations are unlawful and also not subject to parliamentary oversight and transparency.
Right. Very quickly, maybe Cyril thought COVID-19 had to have a command council of 19.
Okay. Look, another interesting development is that an Islamic body in Germany went to court, which allowed congregational Jummah namaz. Now, each country is different in its laws, the extent of the virus, the healthcare system, economic, social situation in the country. For instance, Sweden, which is being bandied about as a success, in fact, compared to similar adjoining Nordic countries, its relaxed plan is a failure. We are told about USA relaxing. USA has had 50,000 deaths, more than any other country in the world. And USA can afford like a million corona tests each month or whatever. So do not be duped by a one-size-fits-all argument. Simple solution are for simpletons.
Right. So in just maybe 30 seconds, anything in conclusion?
Okay. Look, our listeners must obey the law. Do not get embroiled in the ulama power struggle for market share. There was a time when an alim expressed an opinion and concluded with, Allah knows best. These days, if it's I know best and anybody who disagrees with me, there's the K word and the M word. We need to be careful what we say and do. In KZN, we've had Ketamana riots, Inanda riots, xenophobia, songs about Ama India. If we let loose the whirlwind, neither myself, nor you, AB, nor our loved ones will be spared. United we stand, divided we plunge to our destruction. The court asked for unity and Ubuntu. Ameen. In this holy month of Ramadan, let the Ummah act with wisdom and love. Assalamu
alaikum. And I say Ameen to that also. Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As I said, Aslam prefaced this discussion by saying that it's his own opinion on what transpired in the judgment. Aslam. Jazakallah for your input. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam.
Right, so we've got 1 minute left, and let me see if I can take you to another court case very quickly that I came across light at the end of the tunnel. So the donkey said to the tiger, the grass is blue. And the tiger said, no, the grass is green. Then the discussion between the two became very intense, and both of them are firm in their own words. To end this controversy, both went to the lion, the king of the jungle. In the middle of the animal kingdom, sitting on the throne was a lion. And the donkey started yelling before the tiger could say anything. Your Highness, the grass is blue, isn't it? And the lion said, yes, the grass is blue. And the donkey says, this tiger does not believe, annoys me, he should be punished properly. The king declared, tiger will be jailed for a year. King's verdict was heard by the donkey, and he was jumping in joy in the entire jungle. The tiger was sentenced to 1 year in jail. The tiger went to the lion and asked, why, your highness? Grass is green, isn't it? And the lion said, yes, grass is green. And the tiger said, then why am I sentenced to jail? And the lion said, you did not get punished for the grass being blue or green. You have been punished for debating with that stupid donkey. This is AB Dawji bidding you all. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.